Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. Our guest this evening is Trina Kay. She's a public relations consultant. She regularly connects the press to her clients, creating national news coverage. She's an author's agent extraordinaire. Her client includes culinary professionals and nonfiction writers, to advertising agencies and marketing companies, as well as entrepreneurs and branded personalities. Good evening, Trina.
Good evening, Chaim. How are you?
Okay. So tell me, how does a nice Jewish girl like you get into a business like this?
She wants to eat. I like the creativity of doing PR, developing pitches, strategies for my clients, working with media to develop ways to get them coverage. It's a lot of fun. It's stressful, but it's a lot of fun.
How did you get started? I understand you were creative, but how did you get started? Of all the professions, why PR?
Well, it's kind of a long story, and it wasn't something I initially intended to do. I had worked for many, many years in the corporate sector for GTE, which is now Verizon. And I left there over 20 years ago and was doing some marketing. And actually, I was working in the infomercial industry. I was producing infomercials and small spots. And then I kind of segued into doing PR for some of these agencies. It just kind of happened. And one day I partnered with a brand consultant, and we did a major campaign for a British do-it-yourself author, and I got her in the New York Times. And a chef in Washington, D.C. contacted us and wanted us to do branding and PR for him. And he was my first chef. And from there, she and I did a lot of chefs, cookbooks, and then I went on my own and started getting a lot of business in the culinary world, you know, promoting chefs and authors.
Who are some of the better-known names that you promoted as chefs?
Well, as
or
chefs,
cookbook authors
like said,
in general.
Cookbook authors. Well, I did four Susie Fishline's books. I worked with her over the years. I've done all of Paula Scheuer's cookbooks, the Kosher Baker series, the Holiday Kosher Baker, and then her newest one. I've also did a whole series of cookbooks for William Sonoma. I promoted those. I also did Leah Shapira's books when they first came out. I've worked with a lot. I've done some chefs that are here in the West Coast, some in the East Coast. A lot of them, their first cookbooks. I've also worked with a lot of self-published authors who need real help, because when you don't go with a publisher, you don't have any distribution and you don't have any marketing and PR support.
Right.
So I've done lots of self-published books. They actually do very well.
I believe that one of your clients who's going to be on our show tomorrow, Beth Warren, I believe she did a self-published book, no?
No, her book was published. But also with Beth, more than just her book, because it's more than a cookbook, it's a nutrition book about eating healthy by eating kosher.
Right.
I'm also helping her build her brand, and that's a lot of the campaigns that I can do with people that and have done, is that especially if you want to get a cookbook deal, you have to have, it's kind of like a double-edged sword. In order to get a publishing deal, publishers want to see press on you. They want to see that you've done something. So a lot of times I work with chefs, people who are recipe developers, bloggers, and help them develop their brand awareness, getting their name out there, getting them some press so that they build their brand. They build what it is that they want, and that helps when trying to get a cookbook deal.
When an unpublished author comes to you, okay,
mm-hmm.
they obviously have no brand.
Mm-hmm.
What would you recommend to them? How would they go about to get published?
Well, first off, many people who want to write a cookbook and aren't published usually have a blog. So they have some brand platform. And what I always recommend is that you have to really decide, do you really want to do a cookbook? Because cookbooks aren't as profitable as they used to be 15, 20 years ago. And it's a lot of work to do a cookbook. Even if you get a deal with a publisher, there's a lot of work to it and a lot of promotion you have to do on your own. So I always tell bloggers who come to me and ask me about that is to really sit down and consider, one, what is your ultimate goal in writing a cookbook? What is it that you want to come out of this? Do you want to ultimately get a TV show? Do you want to get a sponsorship or endorsement deal? You have to really look, 3 to 4 steps ahead as to what it is that you want. What's the cookbook going to do for you? And then it's looking at how much time are you willing to commit to this project? Because once the cookbook is done, the people who are really successful at selling books are the ones that put themselves out there. They go to cooking schools and they teach classes from the cookbook. They go to people who they know who have restaurants and say, will you do a cookbook dinner for me? I mean, you have to be your own marketer. And one of the other things that I tell them is PR doesn't always sell books. I mean, the goal of PR is to get people to write about your book, whether you're a blogger or you're a newspaper or a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
PR is to drive people to talk about your book. So I get you a review on Epicurious.com or Refinery29 or in The Joy of Kosher. And so they're saying, here's this great cookbook. That doesn't necessarily drive sales. It says, here's your book. So you also have to be out there. If I'm getting your name out there in terms of getting people to write about your cookbook, you also have to be out there hustling and getting your book out there to various bookstores, especially if you're self-published, you have to go out and get the book to stores. You have to go out, as I said, to everybody you know to hold book events for you and going to cooking schools. I mean, you have to be willing to commit time.
But let me ask you one question. Somebody who's never been
mm-hmm.
published before, somebody who heretofore was totally unknown, how, and let's make it even harder, the person is self-published. How
mm-hmm.
does one convince bookstore, please take my book?
Well, you can still, being self-published, you can still go to book distributors yourself. There are companies out there that you can show the book to and see if they're interested in distributing it for you. And in fact, these days, a lot of the outlets you can go to print your book from Amazon Books and some of the others, there's a lot of little small presses that will self-publish your book. Their packages will include distribution, limited, but it depends on your budget and how much you are willing to spend and how many books you're going to print. And, so you can look into that with some of the self-publishing outlets you go to.
Besides cookbooks, you also do nonfiction. What are
mm-hmm.
some of the authors that you have represented?
I have worked with Joe Luciani, who was a psychologist, also Dr. Ben Michaelis, another psychologist, did some self-help books with them. I've also done products. I've done diet products and hair care products and skin care products, working with other business professionals that are looking for book deals, so it's promoting them to the media about what they can say about growing your business. So it can vary. That's one of the fun things about what I do.
Now I'm going to ask you something more direct.
Okay.
The kosher scene has been thinking for a while on doing a cookbook. In fact, you and I spoke on it on through Facebook.
Yeah.
And we are already in the process of doing some of the photography. Now, let me ask you this. How many recipes would be an average for a cookbook? What kind of recipes? Just because I happen to like a recipe does not necessarily mean that somebody else might like it. How do I choose which recipes are the ones most likely to be a success?
Well, that's kind of two-part. If you're going to be published by a publisher is going to help you decide how many recipes they want you to do, and they would go over the recipes and help decide which recipes they want you to use. That's what an editor does. If you're self-publishing it, you know, you have to look at it. I'm not a big fan of huge, you know, 500 recipes. Yeah. Nobody's going to look at 500 recipes.
Exactly.
I think anywhere from 25 to 50. It all depends upon what you're trying to do. If you're doing menus, if you're doing sections, I mean, it's looking at that, and then looking at if you're self-publishing it, you know, you definitely want photographs, you want it to look high quality, then you have to look at your budget. How much is it going to cost to print so many pages, to do so many books? I mean, those are the things that help drive how many recipes, how many photographs you have. And then in terms of which recipes to use, you know, I always say you have to look at it from the standpoint of the audience you're trying to get to. If you're looking in the kosher market, what's new about your recipes? My philosophy is always that there's nothing new in food. A lot of times it's really how you package it. So what are you offering that your audience, your target audience, hasn't seen already? Why would somebody go out and buy your cookbook? And if you can answer that, you know, you can look at the recipes. Well, you know, maybe it's these were recipes that were handed down in my family, so some of them aren't quite mainstream, or I've taken mainstream recipes and I'm putting a new spin on them. Leah Shapira and Victoria Dweck were very, very successful with their Kosher Made Easy, their whole Made Easy series of cookbooks, because they took easy-to-do recipes. A lot of them didn't take very much time. They didn't have a whole lot of ingredients. They were for busy people, busy mothers who didn't have time to make big fancy recipes. So their books sold very well because they filled a niche in the market. One of my favorite cookbooks that I did years ago for two sisters in Toronto, their cookbook was called Bite Me. And they self-published it in Canada. They marketed themselves, and they sold 20,000 copies. And then they went to the Book Expo, and a British-based publisher bought it, published it here in the U.S. They weren't happy with the marketing efforts, so they hired me to do the PR for the book. And I remember I got that cookbook and a recipe into the Washington Post, and I remember the food editor called me when she needed the recipe and photographs, and she said, you know, there's absolutely nothing new in this cookbook in terms of recipes, but I never had so much fun as I did reading through this book. And so Bite Me was all written in humorous, all the recipes were humorously named, they were humorously food-styled and photographed, so what it was it made it more of an experience to read through the book. And that's what the food editor wrote in her review, is that this was one fun cookbook to sit, and she laughed hysterically as she went through the recipes. So that's something to think about, is, again, what are you giving your audience that's different? Maybe the recipes are the same, but maybe you're calling them something different. Maybe you're making this totally humorous, and so that it's the fun aspect. Wow, this is a really fun cookbook. Wow, I'm really enjoying this. You know, it's finding the hook.
One thing that I found interesting with cookbooks as opposed to the classic The Joy of Cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Irma Rombauer, which is very dry, just a recipe and nothing else. And one of the earliest cookbooks I ever read was Joan Nathan, when she was still working for the mayor of Jerusalem. She wrote a book called The Flavors of Jerusalem. Each recipe was introduced with a little story, made the book almost unputdownable, if I can call in a word. And I found it very, very interesting. And yes, the recipes were not really that new, except for a few, you know, some Sephardic recipes. As an Ashkenazi, I found it very interesting, but most of the recipes were not revolutionary. On the other hand, I have a series of books. You mentioned William Sonoma, a series of books called New Flavors. So they have the new flavors for appetizers, desserts, salads, chicken, and basically they take classic recipes and they make a slight variation with some good photography.
Right. Right. Well, I just finished up a PR campaign for a cookbook called Food, Family, and Tradition by Lynn Shapiro, and it was about her her family from Eastern Europe, and about life in Eastern Europe before the Holocaust, before World War II, and her parents had gotten out. They escaped the Holocaust, and so it was part memoir and part recipes, and the recipes weren't anything new, but there were personal stories, like one of the potato kugel recipes. Her mother recounted how when she was in the camps, when the SS officers or the guards would throw away the potato peels in the garbage, if she could manage to get one, that was extra food. And so she always remembered that when she would make this potato kugel recipe. And so it's those kinds of things. That book has gotten, you know, very good publicity, and that was self-published. And it had those anecdotes, those personal stories that made the recipes interesting.
A lot of cookbooks today have little introductions, quite often with personal stories. It's almost like you become a friend of the author without ever having met them. It almost feels like they're friends. You know all about them, or you know, certainly you know a lot about them.
Right, right. And you know,
it seems that today people want more than just a plain recipe that looks almost like a doctor's prescription.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, you know, if you like what somebody is saying and you can identify with them, it draws you to them. It's the same thing about a product, too. It's, you know, what makes you pick a cookbook off the shelf? What makes you pick a bottle of olive oil off the shelf? There's some connection you have that makes you want to buy it, makes you attracted to it. And especially with cookbooks, I wholeheartedly agree with that, because you're telling a story. You're giving a piece of you so that, you know, your audience identifies with you and likes you.
Long time ago, I was told by an author in the fiction field that one of the most important things is what colors are on the cover, because some colors will attract your eye immediately towards it, and the more you look at the book, the more you're likely to buy it. You may be disappointed once you read it, but something there, especially an author you never heard of, is that true, that the look of the cover is important?
I don't know that part of publishing, but I can. That's part of what they do in terms of their marketing and designing when, you know, putting together a cookbook or any product. That's a whole marketing field. But it is true that you're drawn to things that they're designed for you to draw them. I'll give you an example. I was in a little local bookstore here in Los Angeles, and I was listening to somebody talking, and I'm standing in the cookbook aisle. And this book, the spine of it caught my attention because the dust cover, and I could only see the spine, had these great colors. And I pulled it off the shelf. Obviously, you could tell the speaker wasn't that interesting. I pulled this cookbook off, and it was this cookbook I had never heard of. It was for a place I had heard of up in Carmel, the Nepenthe cookbook. And Nepenthe is a very famous restaurant up in Big Sur here in Northern California. And I've never eaten there. And I looked at this cookbook, and I was drawn to the whole look of the book, the cover, everything, the photographs. I thumbed through the recipes, and I bought it. I haven't cooked from it, but I bought it and I've read it, and, you know, but that drew me to it and I had to have it.
Years ago, when I was a freshman at Yeshiva University, back in the prehistoric days of the 60s, yes, that age is me, I know. Anyway, my roommate decided to play a very hard joke on his mother, who came to visit us. When she came in, he had a book laying on his bed, completely white cover, with what looked like blood stains on it, and the title was Suicide.
Oh, my gosh.
You can imagine how the poor lady screamed when she saw that.
Oh, my gosh.
Had
well,
the title,
you know,
been Suicide and not have the blood stains on it, it would not have been as powerful.
Well, one of the big top-selling cookbooks, and it's a vegan cookbook, is called The Thug Kitchen. And their book cover has a knife through a piece of steak. And it's very edgy cover, and the subtitle, I can't quite remember, but it had four-letter words in it, so I won't quote it.
Okay.
But it was all the rage. I mean, the Thug Cookbook, and when I first heard about it, I said, what the hell is that? And then it was, oh, it's a vegan cookbook. Well, and it's very interesting because it got people talking about it. And that's, you know, part of the other thing when you are developing a cookbook, you know, I'm a fan of a little of out of the box, being edgy, because there are so many cookbooks out there. You have to do something that differentiates you from the herd. I mean, and when you look at, like, when 50 Shades of Grey, the book had come out, somebody came out with 50 Shades of Chicken, and it was hysterical. It was all tongue-in-cheek, but they were, you know, viable chicken recipes, but all written in this whole kind of 50 Shades of Grey. And whether it was super successful, it got a lot of press because it was cutting edge and kind of funny and controversial. There was also, I think, 50 Shades of Bacon and all kinds of things. But, you know, it's, again, trying to be out of the box.
Okay, so other than having an interesting cover or spine that calls attention, whether in colors, whether in titles, what else would you suggest would be necessary to make the book, you know, as part of the campaign? Let's suppose that somebody is going to be self-published, at least at the beginning. What can he or she do to make sure that the book stands out?
Well,
other than appearances and everything else?
Well, I mean, part of it is what you call it and how you get it out there, but, you know, it's also your recipes. And, again, it's very difficult because you have to look at what is it that you're selling, what's your brand. Or, you know, if you're a kosher food writer, that's a broad spectrum. So, like Paula Scheuer, for example, specializes in kosher baking. She's a Paris-trained pastry chef. So she does fabulous desserts. So she found a niche. It's finding what is your hook, what's your niche, what's your brand? And, you know, a lot of people just throw recipes out there and want to see what sticks. You know, you have to really look at what are you trying to say? Who are you? Who is your brand? What are the recipes that mean the most to you? And that's what you have to stick with. I had worked with a chef, a restaurant chef. His cookbook was all about romantic meals for two. And he was also working with a brand consultant. His tagline was Love Begins in the Kitchen. And this brand consultant said, oh, you know, I want to build a whole campaign strategy around bringing the family into the kitchen. Love begins in the kitchen as family. And that wasn't really him. His kids were grown. He was more about romance with your partner, romantic meals for two. And so he could never sell her brand ideas. I couldn't really sell it to the media because he didn't believe in it. And when we went with what I said, which was you're romancing French cuisine and the whole romance, he really got behind that, and we were able to get a lot of pickup on that. In fact, Joe Nathan did an article on him in one of the magazines, and that was her tagline, was romancing French cuisine. So you have to be true to your brand. You can't try to fit into a hole or square because that's where you think you're going to make money. If that's not true to who you are, you're not going to be able to sell it.
Okay. Now, I am sure that through your long career, you must have had some very interesting anecdotes, things that happened to you or to people, your acquaintance in your line of work. Care to tell us some of those stories?
Well, a publicist doesn't kiss and tell, but I will say...
You don't have
one
to give
of
names.
No. I wouldn't. I will have to relay a story. My very first time I got my chef, the same chef, French chef, on the Today Show. And this was several years ago, and this was after 2 years of trying to get him on the Today Show. I get him on, and he's cooking with Al Roker, and this was when the show was only till 9 a.m. And he's out on the plaza with Al Roker cooking up salmon, grilling salmon, and showing how to make these salmon sandwiches for summer, healthy summer sandwiches. And at the end of the show, Katie Couric comes out, and we were promoting him with these were meals for two from his cookbook. And Katie Couric comes out, and his restaurant was in Northern Virginia, and she had gone to school in Northern Virginia. And she comes out, and she greets him, and she says, "Oh, your restaurant," she says the name of the restaurant, "my favorite restaurant in the whole world." And she kisses him on both cheeks, and they end the show. Well, then 30 minutes after the show ended, his restaurant website had 40,000 hits in 30 minutes, but not one sale of his cookbook.
Ouch.
Not one. Yeah. And that's one of the things that people have to be aware of. Again, TV PR doesn't necessarily get you sales. It gets you the publicity. You know, I could get you in the New York Times, a review in the New York Times. That doesn't necessarily drive sales. It's what drives sales is the content, what you put into the book, and if people like what you have to say.
Okay, so that means that somebody would have to read it first to like it. How do I get the first person to read it, the first influential person to read it?
Well, that's what a publicist does. That's what a publicist does. That's what I do, is getting it to the influential people to read it and write a review of it. And these days, you have a fabulous army of bloggers out there who will read your book, who will look at it, they will cook from it, and they will review it. And bloggers have become the most efficient way of really getting the word out about your book, more so than newspapers and magazines, because circulation for newspapers and magazines are going down.
It is declining.
And bloggers,
right.
Yeah, and bloggers are going up. And bloggers take their work very seriously. They will really scrutinize a book. They will test recipes. And if they like it, they will do fabulous reviews and do contests and giveaways to give away your book. And that's really what helps sell it, is the word of mouth. And the more people that talk about it, that sells a book.
Okay. And since we are almost out of time, in parting, I'm going to ask you again, what is the best advice you can give to someone who wants to become published?
Well, the best advice, that's a bit of a loaded question. It's, again, you have to really sit down and say, what is my brand? What do I want? what do I want from a cookbook, and also lower your expectations of what's going to happen if you get a publishing deal, because you're not going to get the money that you think, and you are going to have to still work just as hard as if you self-published a book. So it really comes down to, you know, what do I want to get out of this? Why do I want to do this? What's my ultimate goal in being published? And if you can answer that, then you can go out and sell your cookbook to a publisher and get a deal.
And we're just about out of time, although I have a billion questions for you. So you're not getting
well,
away so easy. I'm
going
to have to have you on the show again and again.
Oh, anytime, Chaim, anytime.
Okay, thank you very, very much for gracing us with your presence and answering
my
questions.
Well, thank you for having me. This
and
was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from The Kosher Scene. Tune us in tomorrow at the same time, 10 o'clock, when our guest will be Beth Warren, cookbook author and nutritionist. Good night, and thank you, one and all.